Deployment Toolkit 2012. So before we get started in that, we just wanted to thank everyone for using MDT. MDT 2010 Update 1 has been out for just over a year, I believe, and it's had over 500,000 downloads. We've had lots of people who've had success using MDT for automating their image creation process, for performing their actual deployments, for reducing the number of images that they used, to create more of a dynamic deployment process. So hopefully that's been helpful for you. We are still committed to adding new features and capabilities. MDT 2012 obviously is the first part of that. At the end of this session, we'll talk about kind of the roadmap as we move forward. So overall, things are looking good. We're happy. Hopefully you'll keep downloading and keep us employed. So first up, let's talk about what's new in MDT 2012. There are multiple scenarios in MDT. For those of you who aren't as familiar with MDT, we basically have light touch deployment, zero touch deployment, and user-driven installation. Light touch is a non-config manager deployment scenario, where the other two are based around Configuration Manager 2007 or 2012. So we've added capabilities to all of those. We don't have new features in any one particular area, although the main focus for this release really was trying to provide support for System Center 2012. That doesn't mean that we put most of the new features in for System Center 2012. That's just what drove this initial release. At the same time, because of the time frames involved, we added initial support for deploying Windows 8 Consumer Preview. So we've got the beginnings of our Windows 8 support into MDT 2012, and then added additional tools and products and capabilities in there as well. So let's dive in then to what's changed for light touch installation. So for those of you using MDT without Configuration Manager, the types of things that we've added in this release are kind of all over the place. So it becomes more of a laundry list of features. We'll go through each of these fairly briefly and then try to spend some more time in demos. So first, we added a new monitoring capability. So this is designed so that from a central machine, your deployment workbench machine, you can watch the deployments that are going on in your environment. So if you have technicians going around initiating deployments, you can see what deployments are currently running, where they're at in the process, and also then tied into the next item on the list, the Diagnostics and Recovery Toolkit, even initiate remote control of those machines while they're in Windows PE and interact and troubleshoot if there happen to be any problems during the process. We've also added in integration with the Security Compliance Manager. If you're not familiar with that tool, it's another solution accelerator from our team that supports providing baselines for security settings that should be applied to the operating system. So we've taken the baselines from the Security Compliance Manager, exported them into local GPO packs, and then added those local GPO packs into the MDT task sequences so that when you deploy the OS, we apply them automatically and make sure that your OS is appropriately secured. We've also added in support for Windows RE to help with the process of staging a boot image onto the boot volume of your machine. So in case the OS won't boot, it can automatically fail back to this boot image, where you can then run the Dart tools, maybe to try to repair it, maybe just get to a point where you could connect back to the network and reinstall the OS doing a normal light touch installation. So various options available there. There are also some new deployment scenarios and OSs that we needed to add. As far as scenarios go, we now support deploying to VHDs. This isn't virtual machine VHDs. This is VHDs on a physical hard disk where Windows 7 and above can actually boot into that VHD file. So this deployment process is all about formatting and partitioning the physical disk, if that's necessary, creating an empty VHD file, formatting and partitioning that VHD file, deploying an OS into it, and then setting the machine to boot into the OS that's inside that VHD. For this release, that's primarily limited to bare metal scenarios. We had some limitations in the deployment process that caused that not to work very well with existing OSs on the hard drive. But as we move forward to our next release, we're planning to add additional scenarios to that. The goal would be to get to a point where we can take a machine that's running, say, Windows XP or Windows 7, and then deploy a new OS to it, maybe Windows 8, into a VHD without disturbing the existing OS. So at that point, you have a dual boot machine. You can run your existing OS day to day and then boot into another OS in that VHD file for whatever testing you might need to perform. We've also added a lot of additional support for deploying UEFI computers. If you're not familiar with UEFI, it's the replacement for the legacy BIOS that's been running on PCs since they were first created. It's very old. It's been around for a long time. It has lots of limitations on boot file size, on initialization time, lots of limitations that needed to be overcome. So rather than trying to fix up the current BIOS infrastructure, they just have replaced it. They've created a brand new UEFI implementation that is the boot firmware on the machine. A lot of you probably don't even know that you have machines that support UEFI. They've been out for a while. Most of the laptop shipping today from the major manufacturers, Dell, HP, Lenovo, use UEFI BIOSes. But they also include a compatibility module that allows them to fall back into a BIOS emulation mode so that older versions of the OS can install properly without having to worry about the fact that that old legacy BIOS isn't there anymore. So everything just works today, but you don't get any real benefit out of the new UEFI capabilities. As we move to Windows 8, and additional improvements have been put into UEFI and Windows support for UEFI, it becomes more important for us to support UEFI to do Windows deployments. Some of the changes that you would notice as part of the UEFI deployment process are that the disk needs to be partitioned differently. We need first a GPT disk instead of an MBR disk, and three partitions instead of two. So we'll automatically create the necessary GPT and partition structure when we find that the machine is booted into a UEFI mode. Beyond that, most of the logic to deploy the OS hasn't changed. The main things really are just managing that initial boot process, managing the firmware settings that go along with that. So we tried to make it as transparent as possible. As machines come out that are Windows 8 logo compliant, they will have UEFI support, and that UEFI support is designed to be extremely fast to boot. So machines that post in fractions of a second, that get to the point where the OS begins to boot within a fraction of a second, and then the OS, especially on machines that have SSDs, itself can boot in just a few seconds. That actually has caused a few interesting side effects. You might have seen the Build 8 blog talking about how now the machine will post so fast that you can't hit F8 fast enough anymore to get to the boot menu. That's one of the challenges that you now run into. Another challenge is that the machines, when they post, will display the OEM's logo. That logo would flash by so fast, no one would be able to see it. So they had to add logic into Windows 8 to capture that image, and Windows will actually continue to display the OEM's logo for a period of time while it's booting behind it. All of this because the initialization process on these UEFI computers is that much faster than what you're used to today. So that's why we think UEFI is much more important, that people will begin using this for deployments moving forward. We also added support for a couple of additional operating systems. Windows Thin PC, which is a stripped-down version of Windows designed to be run as a thin client. It basically allows you to run Internet Explorer and a terminal server client, or Citrix client, or any other remote desktop or VDI client to connect to a remote machine. It can't install any other software, any other applications. It's only licensed for that limited purpose. It's provided as a software assurance benefit with the idea that you can take this OS, deploy it to your older hardware, and use it then to connect to a VDI or terminal server backend to do more of the heavy lifting. It's basically a thinned-down version of Windows 7. It's about 60% of the size of Windows 7, runs reasonably in a 1 gig machine footprint, although it probably says that it'll run in less. I'm not sure you would want to, but it can. So for us, this is mainly just a testing exercise, because from an installation standpoint and a behavioral standpoint, it installs just like Windows 7. So we just needed to make sure that there wasn't anything else in our scripts that would have any issues with this new OS being thrown at it. PosReady 7 is kind of in that same category. It's another flavor of Windows Embedded, just like Windows Thin PC. Again, it installs exactly like Windows 7, looks and feels exactly like Windows 7. It's just designed specifically for point-of-sale systems, cash registers, self-checkout machines, those types of things. So those two new OSs are available to volume license customers. MDT supports all volume license operating systems. So as a result, we added those to complete our suite. We also have reworked the client-side wizards. A lot of people complain that the wizards were ugly, that they didn't look very nice, that they were too sparse. They were actually put together initially during the Windows Vista days and were designed to mimic the look and feel of Windows Vista's wizards, which, if you remember Windows Vista, for those of you who care to remember Windows Vista, it used wizard panes that were very white with green or blue text in most cases. No graphics, nothing really frilly on those wizards at all. So we've reworked them for this release to be much more like the standard System Center look and feel, with navigation bar on the left, a header across the top, some additional color added into them, icons added into them, just to give them a more polished look. We've also added support in the task sequence to run PowerShell scripts. You could have done that before, and probably many of you were doing that before, just by running PowerShell.exe and specifying the necessary command line options. We wanted to take it further than that by integrating it into the task sequence so that you would have an execute PowerShell action in the task sequence where you could say, I want to run this script with these parameters, and know that that integration would allow you to do logging to bdd.log, just like any other MDT script, that you would be able to display progress in the task sequence. So if you are doing PowerShell report progress calls, they'll show up as expected. Write progress calls. They'll show up on the screen. And also to help you with interacting with the task sequence environment, to set task sequence variables, to retrieve task sequence variables. So really just trying to simplify the experience of running a PowerShell script inside of the task sequence that's not just something that you pass parameters into, that it's more like a typical MDT script where it can interact with the task sequence within the PowerShell code. We also added the initial Windows 8 support. So MDT 2012 supports Windows 8 consumer preview, and the version of the assessment and deployment kit that was released with Windows 8 consumer preview. ADK, the Assessment and Deployment Kit, is the replacement for Windows AIK, so that now means that MDT will work with either the ADK or Windows AIK. Don't install them both on one machine, it's not a good idea. Keep the ADK for your lab work at this point as you're testing with Windows 8. Use Windows AIK for your production work as you're deploying Windows 7. There are some changes between Windows 8 Consumer Preview and Windows 8 Release Preview, which came out fairly recently. MDT 2012 doesn't officially support the Release Preview. We haven't tested it with the Release Preview. We have heard from some people that it works to do some things. We've heard from other people that it doesn't work to do other things. We don't know. We haven't tried it out. We're focused on the next release of MDT to add support for Windows 8 Release Preview and beyond. That coming release will be available within the next few weeks. So we'll release that one, and then we'll have the support for the latest Win 8. So in addition to those main features, we also made a whole bunch of behind-the-scenes improvements that you may or may not notice as you're going through. We've changed the partitioning logic. So with MDT 2010, a lot of people complain that we created the OS volume first and then created a small boot volume at the end of the disk. Okay, that's less than ideal because now that boot volume is in the way. If you ever wanted to extend the OS volume, you can't. Plus, the Windows AIK documentation says to do it the other way around. So MDT 2012 does it the other way around. We'll now create the boot volumes at the front of the disk and then put the OS at the end of the disk. That was actually a very large amount of work because managing now all of these different partition variations is hard. Now we needed to be able to deploy Windows 7 to a machine running Windows XP on a single partition. We needed to be able to deploy with the boot partition first. We needed to deploy with the boot partition last. We needed to deploy to UEFI, non-UEFI. All those different variations really complicate things. So a huge amount of work went into partitioning for that. We also put in a lot of work to the user state migration script, not because we were looking to add a whole bunch of functionality, but the script had just gotten kind of nasty over the years, so it was time to rework that one and take care of some of the duplicate code in there, make it prettier, make it easier for us to support. At the same time, we added in support for the new version of USMT that came with Windows 8. We call it USMT 5, although the USMT team doesn't put a number on it. It's just the version of USMT that comes with Windows 8. It doesn't have any major changes to it, but it does mean that we now have a pretty significant matrix that we need to figure out. Depending on what OS you're coming from, what OS you're going to, and what versions of USMT you have, we had to pick the best one to do the user state migration for that machine. So we've added support for that. We also put in a lot of progress displays, not only in the user state migration script, but in any other script that takes a long amount of time, so that you know what's going on, that there should never be a task sequence step that just sits with the executing step on the screen without showing you what it's up to, if it's going to take more than, say, 30 or 45 seconds for it to run. So things like installing Windows updates, installing apps, injecting drivers, doing user state migration, capturing images, deploying images, performing multicast transmissions of OSs, all of those now display progress as you're going through the task sequence. So you'll see the first progress bar for the overall task sequence, and underneath it a second progress bar that shows you what the current step is up to. We also added support for doing cross-platform deployments. So now from an x86 boot media, boot CD, or Pixie boot, you can install x64 OSs as well. So you don't have to keep two different boot medias around if you wanted to do x86 and x64 deployments. Windows has restrictions that prevent the other way around, so you can't use x64 to deploy x86 because you can't service it in that environment, but you can do x86 boot to deploy x64. So some people look at that and say, hey, that's great news because now I can move to entirely x86 boot images. Well, remember that UEFI discussion that we had a little bit ago? To deploy a UEFI machine, you need to use a 64-bit boot image. You can't use a UEFI x86 machine to deploy to a UEFI x64 computer. You can't use a UEFI x64 boot image to deploy to a UEFI x86 computer. That's a UEFI limitation. So maybe the right answer is let's all get to x64 and all these problems will go away. But in the short term, yeah, you may still need to use multiple boot images for different purposes. We've also improved the cleanup logic that's being run by MDT behind the scenes. We've had lots of scenarios where something wouldn't go right during the deployment process. Maybe you held the power button down and turned the machine off in the middle of the task sequence because you didn't want to wait for it to finish, you just wanted to reinitiate another test. Maybe the deployment failed when the OS blue screened. Maybe there was a missing network driver and it couldn't continue the task sequence. Whatever the situation was, there would be remnants of that initial task sequence on the hard drive. The mini-NT folder, underscore SMS task sequence folder, other pieces that got in the way of the next deployment. So we added logic to be able to detect dirty environments, an environment that didn't get to where it's currently at in a proper way, whether that was because of blue screen or whatever the problem was. We'll detect that and put a message up on the screen that says that we've detected a dirty environment. Would you like to continue the task sequence, or would you like to clean it off and start fresh? If you continue, there's no guarantee that it's going to work. There's no guarantee that we have any idea what's going to happen next, but hey, we're willing to try it. Normally, the best answer is going to be wipe it clean and start over. We have heard feedback on that generally it works well. However, it's exposing issues that people didn't know they had in their task sequences. If you're installing applications and you don't suppress the reboots that those applications are performing, the app basically rips the task sequencer out from under the OS, just reboots out from under it. And when it comes back up again after that reboot, you'll see the dirty message saying that we don't know how we got here. We were happily running along waiting for that application to finish, and next thing we know, we're booting back into the OS again. What happened in between? We don't know. Dirty environment, what do you want to do with it? In those situations, you would need to figure out how to suppress the reboots for those apps to make sure that that doesn't happen. An app should never reboot while it's running inside of a task sequence. If it needs to reboot, it should return a return code 3010. The task sequence will see that, know that it requires a reboot, and initiate it for you. The fact that it worked before in MDT 2010 was an accident. If you were to ever do something like that in Config Manager, it wouldn't work at all. The Config Manager task sequencer would blow up. It would come back with an access exception as the machine was rebooting, and it wouldn't try to resume that task sequence again. It would be dead. So not fixing those problems isn't a good idea. You really should try to figure out what's going on with those and clean them up appropriately. We also have a check in that's looking to see when we are installing an OS, did that OS install complete successfully? So maybe there's a situation where we run setup.exe. Setup.exe says, okay, I've gotten far enough to reboot the machine. We've lost control at that point. MDT is no longer in control of the process. It's setup running the process at that point. So the machine reboots, it starts to specialize the OS, it might run through UBI, who knows what would happen. But it gets to a point where it's done and it's supposed to call the first logon commands to resume the MDT task sequence. If that doesn't happen, MDT will detect it and say this is a dirty environment as well. That the OS install started, we never got any notification back from the OS that it was done, yet somehow we're booting back into Windows PE or we're booting into an OS and we don't know what OS it is. We'll detect that and throw an error there too. That's primarily to catch situations where you get an error from setup in the middle of the process saying that it didn't like something with the unattend.xml or whatever issue happened to cause that. We need to be able to detect that and clean those up too. So you may see those. Most of the time they're telling you something serious went on and you should take some action to do those, to clean those up. We also added another very trivial feature to simplify the creation of VM templates. When you're creating a VM template, maybe you need to populate your VMM library with operating system images to create VMs. MDT is really good at doing the image, build, sysprep, and capture. But in the case of a VM template, you don't really want to capture a WIM. All you want is a VHD. So if you're building in a virtual machine, what you really want to do is install the OS, sysprep it, and shut down. Because as soon as that VM is shut down, you can then tell VMM, see that VM? Make it a template. So the feature that we added was another option for sysprepping to just say sysprep it only. Combine that with the finish action support from MDT 2010, where you can say finish action equals shutdown. You can then cause the machine to sysprep and shut down so that it's ready to turn into a template. It's like a 15-minute change for us, but makes people's lives who create VM templates much easier. So let's switch over to a demo machine and look at some of these in a little more detail. First up, let's look at the wizard changes. This is kind of the first introduction to the look and feel changes here, where we can see the banner across the top. In the case of this welcome screen, we don't yet have a navigation bar on the left-hand side, but that'll show up shortly. You can see our integration here with the Windows recovery environment, so we could choose that and launch WinRE. I've got Dart integrated in here too, so if I click to run the Dart tools, we see the full menu of all the Dart tools that you could make use of here. Some of them, like being able to launch Explorer, is fairly useful within Windows PE. They've also added in the latest versions of Dart the ability to do a remote connection, so remote control from a full OS into Windows PE for whatever diagnostics and troubleshooting purposes you want to do. So we've added support for that. I don't want to launch it here because I want to show what happens when you just go through the normal MDT process. So when I click to run the deployment wizard, we'll ask for credentials, and then run the normal deployment wizard itself. But we'll see down here there's a minimized remote connection listener waiting for connections from a machine that wants to remote control this machine when it's in Windows PE. When you're normally using Dart to do this remote control, you would need to type in those three pieces of information, the ticket number, 453-whatever, IP address, 10.1.whatever, and the port number, which is random, 49157 in this case. Once you have those three pieces of information, you can then make a connection. So the normal Dart flow would be technician picks up the phone and calls you and says, I'm having trouble with a computer, can you remote control it and look at it? You on the other end say, okay, read me the ticket number, IP address, and port. I'll type those in and take a look at the machine. So what we wanted to do is tie that capability together with the MDT monitoring to automate that. So let me minimize that. Let's go ahead and navigate through the wizard here to show you the basics of this. Got a whole bunch of task sequences here. Let me choose, say, Windows 7 Enterprise x86. I'll join a work group. We won't talk about that one yet. User data, locale, apps that I want to install. Do I want to sysprep and capture? Nope. In this case, just install the OS. Do I want to enable BitLocker? So a lot of the functionality is the same. There are a few changes in here, but mostly it's just changes in look and feel. So at this point, we can initiate the deployment. We can see the task sequence kick off. We can see these additional progress UIs showing up, in this case when we're creating partitions. We'll get a little bit further when it starts to install the OS, and we can see that it will count through the percent complete on applying that. So let's go ahead and switch over to the server then. And look at the monitoring piece. So if I refresh the display here, I can see the deployments that are currently running in my environment. So in this case, the one that we just kicked off 34 seconds ago is to deploy an operating system. The computer name is MiniNT whatever. When we look at the properties there, we can see where it's at in the task sequence. It's about halfway through, step 44 out of 88. The percent complete is actually based on the number of steps, not on the amount of time. So some steps take longer than others, so it gets to the 50% mark pretty darn quickly, but then it takes quite a while to install the operating system, to install apps, to install updates, so it's really just trying to show you where it's at in the overall process. Now, in this case, we could click on the remote control, a remote desktop link, and it would try to do a remote desktop connection, which isn't going to work while the machine's in Windows PE, so it's just running mstsc.exe. But we could click here on Dart Remote Control. That button will show up anytime that the client has provided those Dart connection details back to the server as part of the monitoring process. So we click the button, it runs the Dart Remote Viewer, takes a little bit for it to launch, and eventually it'll come up and show us what's going on inside of that virtual machine from this other machine. So it's really just designed to make this whole Dart remote control process easy, as well as giving you the progress of all the machines that are deploying in your environment. So if you ever have any question about, well, is now a good time to put a new version of the image in or to make changes to the task sequence? No, because there are 5 deployments running right now. I probably don't want to mess with that image. So here's the remote control viewer. We can interact with it. We can see what's going on. It's just about done with applying the image. It will fairly quickly reboot after that. As soon as it leaves Windows PE, then we can't remote control it anymore. We would be able to use remote desktop once we get back into the full OS. So Dart remote control is only for that period of time once it's in Windows PE. So that's easy enough. Let's look at a few other things while we're here. On this particular computer, I've actually installed the assessment and deployment kit for Windows 8. So if we look at the properties for the deployment share, and more specifically, the properties for Windows PE, we can see how that affects things. This list of features that are available to be added has grown quite a bit and added a few interesting things like .NET Framework, PowerShell 3.0, which now fully supports Windows PE, and a bunch of other things that you could have added separately before, like 802.1x support, PPPoE support, RNDIS support. All of those are now built into the version of PE in the ADK. So we can install any of those, as well as some specific commandlets for secure boot, storage management, and other areas, just to expand on what PowerShell can do inside of PE. MDT really just wants to use ADO by default. Adding in Dart gives us the remote control capabilities and the additional tools in the menu, so those are the most common ones. But if you wanted to start running PowerShell inside of Windows PE, you could do that. It is worth mentioning that in MDT 2012, the execute PowerShell script step doesn't support PowerShell 3.0. It only supports PowerShell 2.0. Because PowerShell 2.0 is based on .NET 3.5, PowerShell 3.0 is built on top of .NET 4.0, so we had to make some adjustments for the next version of MDT to support PowerShell 3.0 inside of PE or inside of a new OS. Okay, so we've got those additional components there with the ADK. Otherwise, most of what you would get with the ADK becomes transparent. The other thing that you might notice behind the scenes is if we go into the deployment share, we've rearranged where the Windows PE, or sorry, the USMT files are. They're no longer in a folder by themselves. They're now under Tools x64 or Tools x86, depending on the version. And the folders, since we have to support multiple versions at one time, you need to have the ability to put multiple versions of USMT into your deployment share. MDT will automatically put one version of it in there based on whether you have ADK installed, which gives you USMT 5, or have Windows AIK installed, which gets you USMT 4, or if for some reason you're still doing deployments to Windows XP, well, then you still need to have USMT 3. So USMT 3 supports migrating to Windows XP. USMT 4 supports deploying to up to Windows 7, and USMT 5 supports deploying from XP to Windows 7 or 8. So that's where we end up with the logic to pick the appropriate version. But the main reason for rearranging the folder structure is so that we could get 3 different versions on the deployment share at one time. Before, we only could get one out there at any particular time. So if you're doing XP deployments today and using USMT 3 as part of, say, a break-fix scenario, or even pretty much just break-fix scenarios at this point, you would have to manually install USMT 3 on a machine to get the installation files for USMT 3 and then X-copy them into a USMT 3 folder so that MDT finds them in the right place. The documentation describes that. That is a change from the cab file or the install process that we would do in the past. Now we just look for the the raw files here because it gives us a much more consistent behavior between USMT 3, 4, and 5. Okay. Let's look a little bit at the task sequences. We've added, if we say that we want to create a new task sequence, we can still put in name and ID like before, and we get a choice of templates. We've added two new templates for deploy to VHD support, one for client and one for server. This is the same process that I described before. Format the disk, create and format the VHD, deploy to the VHD, set the VHD up to boot. So I've already created a couple of these. So let me cancel out of that wizard. We can look at one of these, and that'll make it a little more clear that we have a standard task sequence here that on a new computer will format and partition the physical disk, will create a VHD, it'll format and partition that VHD, and once it gets to the install operating system step, it's just like any other operating system installation at that point. We just have to make sure that we set up the BCD appropriately to do the booting. So let's switch over to a client machine here. Which client is it? Must be this one. So I've done a deployment using that VHD template. You might notice something else that's a little different here. We have the summary screen in the middle of a blank window. Where's Explorer? Where's the shell? That's one of the features that we added that we didn't talk about yet, is the ability to hide the shell during the process. Instead of doing the auto log on and then running the MDT task sequence from the startup group, we've provided an option to say, I don't want to do that. Instead, I want to always run the task sequence from run once before the shell shows up. So that way it keeps people from interfering with it. We've also added the ability to turn off Task Manager, so if they hit Control-Alt-Delete and try to get another process up to tinker with it while the task sequence is still running, they won't be able to do that. So it won't actually allow the Explorer to run until I click Finish here. And once I do that, we can see in the corner here it should initialize Internet Explorer. The main reason that you wouldn't want to do this, well, when you're in a lab and you're just trying to work out the process, it's good to have this turned off because there are times you want to be able to get to Explorer and get to Task Manager. In production, you may want to turn it on as long as your apps will still install properly with that in place. We have seen a few applications that get a little worked up when Internet Explorer hasn't yet initialized itself, and they just won't install properly. There were some IBM apps. I don't remember the specific apps, but they wouldn't install in this particular setup. So definitely try it out and make sure that you don't have any issues with that. It certainly doesn't cause MDT any issues, but there's always the potential that it could cause some of your third-party apps to complain a little bit. My machine's a little slow here. Let's see what's going on. Yeah, there's a bug that we're still trying to work on. This one's actually running USMT 5 and did a USMT state migration offline, which is a feature coming in MDT 2012 Update 1. And in that process, when USMT runs in the new OS to restore, it kills Explorer. Nice feature. So hide shell and USMT 5 aren't getting along too well right now, but otherwise, process isn't too bad. So let's just look at one thing here to confirm that this really is a VHD deployment. So if I look at disk management, I can see the C drive here is a VHD that actually resides on the D drive, which is the physical disk. So by default, MDT will say, okay, I want to create a VHD. I'll put that on the biggest disk, and I'll create it so that it can at maximum take up 80% of that physical disk. You can override that by setting some task sequence variables, but that's the default. So that's where we get the 90 versus 126 size. It's initially created as a dynamically expanding VHD, but if you're familiar with boot to VHD, what happens when it boots for the first time? It expands to full size. So it's already taking up that full amount of disk space. But other than the BCD entries, which are actually stored on the system partition that say boot from that VHD, there's nothing different about the way the OS works and behaves, with a few exceptions. Doesn't support BitLocker. You can't enable BitLocker when you're booted from a VHD. It doesn't support sleep and hibernate, so power management kind of goes out the door. So there are some things that would tell you that, yeah, this probably isn't something that I want to use for all the machines in my environment, but for testing purposes or for server deployments or for things where those particular items aren't really an issue, this could work reasonably well. Okay. Let me switch back over to the server. I also have task sequences here for Windows Thin PC. For PosReady 7, which has two different versions, an x86 and x64 version, we used the same task sequence to deploy those because they installed just like Windows 7 does, so nothing special about those other than you can import them in and we'll figure out what to do with them. As far as PowerShell goes, I've got a few sample task sequences here that we've used for testing, but if I look at this PowerShell test one, I've added a single run PowerShell script step, which I could add to any task sequence just by saying add general run PowerShell script. I can type in the name of the script, which MDT will search for in the deployment chair. Normally it'll find it in the scripts folder, so that's probably the easiest place to put it. If you wanted to, you could put in a UNC path or a relative path to other locations in the deployment chair, but simplest to just drop it in the scripts folder, tell us the name of it. So let me run that task sequence. Actually, let's look at the script that it's going to run first. It's not much of a PowerShell script. It's really just designed to use the functionality that MDT provides and to show how to do a few things inside a PowerShell. So it's just writing some output, the typical Hello World program. It imports a server manager module from it's a Windows Server module that allows you to query the server to see what modules are installed, what features are installed. We can then ask PowerShell, give me a list of all the modules that are installed, give me a list of all the PowerShell drives. Here's where it gets a little more interesting, though. We've provided this TSENV and TSENV list PowerShell providers, which expose the entire task sequence environment like it's a drive. So I can actually do a directory of that provider, and it'll list out all the task sequence variables. So how many of you have ever written a script that you put inside of a task sequence to dump all the task sequence variables? It's probably about a 5-line script, not very big. Create the object for each item in get variables, display the item next. You can do that in one line with this setup. All you had to do is dir tsenv and say output it to the host. So we'll see what that looks like. Then to interact with the progress display, just have a simple loop to count from 1 to 100 and set the percent complete by calling the normal PowerShell write progress commandlet. And this last line was just to prove that we had fixed a bug where we didn't properly handle relative references in scripts, but doesn't really matter in the case of this demo. So let's kick that off just by running lighttouch.vbs, saying that I want to skip the wizard because I don't really want to walk through the wizard again, and I'll specify that I want to run task sequence ID PS test. It'll take a few seconds to initialize. We'll see the normal gather progress display go by, and then it'll start to run the task sequence. So it takes it a few seconds to initialize as PowerShell is starting up, and then it'll begin to run the script, and we'll be able to see the progress count by as it counts from 1 to 100. Otherwise, we won't see very much going on here. It's kind of boring to watch. So now it's counting up from 1 to 100. As soon as that finishes, the task sequence will be complete because the task sequence only had one step in it anyway. So you saw that the task sequence finished there, and you also saw that the summary wizard came up almost immediately. How many of you have ever wondered if you use MDT 2010 why it takes a minute for that to happen in MDT 2010? It was a bug in the task sequencer. We fixed that bug in MDT 2012, so now it actually will complete immediately. There was an issue where it would try to delete a file that it was using itself, and it would try every second for 60 seconds before it would finally give up, which caused that 1 minute interval where the task sequence was really done, but it hadn't yet told the MDT scripts that it was done, so you sat there looking at the screen trying to figure out what the heck is it up to. Now it completes immediately. So if we click, well, first, before I click finish, let me bring up Explorer, because in MDT 2010, when that task sequence finished, you would still be able to see the MiniNT folder present on the machine. So there is a MiniNT folder here, but there's not a whole lot in it. If we look at the bdd.log, the only thing that's in it are the lines that were necessary to launch the wizard itself. So MDT's already gone through the cleanup logic and moved all the logs from that task sequence into the Windows temp deployment logs folder, just to make sure that if you were to power off a machine with that summary wizard still being displayed, you wouldn't run into a dirty prompt on the next boot because, well, it hadn't yet cleaned up until you click finish before. Now it cleans up before this wizard's actually displayed. So I'll click finish. And then let's look at the log that created. So each PowerShell script now creates a log just like the normal MDT scripts do. We can see at the beginning of it, it wrote hello world like we told it to. It gave us a list of the PowerShell modules that were loaded. It did a directory of the Windows environment. So we can see all the different environment variables that are in this case, drives that were defined. And then here's that one-liner that displays every task sequence variable that was defined. So we can see the password, which is actually stored encoded, the architecture, the asset tag, all the different variables that MDT gathers as part of the deployment process. There's a new one here, event service, that's tied into the monitoring feature to tell the clients where they're supposed to phone home to. So all of that gets displayed by that one line. We then have another listing that shows all of the list variables. So things that normally you would see is like IP address 001, IP address 002, 003. It gets kind of tedious to deal with those in PowerShell to say I want to add a new one to the end of that list, so we converted them into arrays so that you can use normal PowerShell array logic with them. Then we have the progress display, which didn't log anything, and then the script completed with the return code 0. So fairly easy to put PowerShell logic into the task sequence and have it interact with the task sequence there. Another thing that we needed to do for Windows 8 support is to support Metro apps. If you haven't looked at Windows 8 yet, Metro apps are kind of a completely new concept. It's much more similar to like the Windows Phone style of application rather than a traditional MSI app. They're designed to always install per user. They're always self-contained. They don't really install, they just get registered. So as far as installation goes for MDT, we're not installing anything. We're just going to register the app. Now, with modern apps, with Metro apps, you can install them, which means make it available for the user that you installed them for, or you can provision them. When you provision a Metro app, you're saying, I want this Metro app to be automatically installed for every user on the machine automatically. So let's say that MDT only supported installs, which happen per user. What user does MDT LightTouch run under? Administrator. What good would it do to install Metro apps as administrator? Absolutely none, because you don't use the administrator account. You use normal accounts. So MDT provisions apps. It will use DISM behind the scenes to provision an application to say this app should automatically be installed for every user on the machine. So rather than have you type in some nasty DISM command lines to get that to work, we've set it up so that you can import a Metro app into MDT as a standard application, but then for the command line, just specify the name of the appx file, which is the package that contains the application. So if you have developers in your enterprise that are building custom Metro applications, when they compile it, it'll kick out one of these appx files and a certificate that goes along with it, put those into a folder, import that into MDT, specify the command line that's the name of the appx file, and we'll take care of the rest to provision that application. So we've got that basic appx support in there. We wanted to be able to do more with them, but lack of time, we couldn't automate it much beyond that. But it makes it fairly easy for these simple applications to install them. Okay. Next on the list, zero-touch installation. This is a much easier one because most of the work either we've already talked about for Light Touch, since we share scripts between them, or it was work specifically done to support System Center 2012. To support Configuration Manager 2012, we needed to integrate with the new console. We needed to make sure that all of our wizards would work with that. Easy enough. We then had to add support into the task sequence for the new Config Manager 2012 features, like support for the new application model and support for configuring user device affinity, so you could configure a primary user for the machine. We added support for the new pre-execution command logic that you can put into a boot image, which is slightly different than the pre-execution hook that you had with Config Manager 2007. And, well, at the same time, we had to make sure we didn't break Config Manager 2007 because we need to support both of them. We're not going to say overnight everyone must go to Config Manager 2012. So MDT 2012 still supports Config Manager 2007 as well. But otherwise, we have the same PowerShell support, a lot of the same behind-the-scenes improvements. We have the same partition enhancements in ZTI as we do in LightTouch, although the implementation will end up looking different. In LightTouch, we can have one format and partition disk step that figures out on the fly what it needs to do and create the right partition structure based on the OS that you're deploying. In Config Manager, we had to be a little more explicit. So instead of having one format and partition disk step, we have three. One for XP that creates a single large partition. One for Vista that creates a 2-gig boot partition and then the rest of the disk for the operating system. And then one for Windows 7 and above that creates a 500 meg boot partition and the rest of the disk for the operating system. When we get into MDT 2012 Update 1 and Config Manager 2012 SP1 CTP, which they announced earlier today, we will have a fourth step in the task sequence to do the UEFI formatting and partitioning, which is, again, different between the different OSs. So you'll see that there are multiple condition or multiple task sequence steps to do the formatting with conditions on them based on the OS that we're installing. UEFI is only supported on Windows 7 and above, so we only had to add one step for UEFI, which is how we went from 3 to 4 when we added UEFI support. Okay. Config Manager 2012 RTM doesn't yet support Windows 8 deployments, doesn't yet support ADK, so don't try to use it. We did do some code changes to get ready for that support, but the full support comes with the Config Manager SP1 CTP and the MDT 2012 Update 1 Beta 1 that'll be out in the next few weeks. So let's take a quick look at that. Let me move Workbench out of the way. Bring up the new Config Manager 2012 console. If you haven't seen this yet, it is significantly different than the old console. Most of the time, I think it's an improvement. But as far as the MDT integrations go, When I right-click on task sequences, I can say create an MDT task sequence. And we also have a boot image wizard in here to create a new boot image. That's primarily where the MDT integrations are. Beyond that, it's integrations in the task sequence itself. So if we were to edit one of these task sequences, we can see those multiple format and partition disk steps. Like in this case, we have all four of them because this is an update one build. So we have one for UEFI, one for Windows 7 and above, one for Vista and above, and one for XP. We've also added in like the GPO pack logic to integrate the Security and Compliance Manager, same with Light Touch and Zero Touch. The other thing that you might see that's a little different here is another change coming in MDT 2012 Update 1, where we're merging the ZTI task sequence and the UDI task sequence together into a single task sequence. So rather than have two different templates, we'll just have one. Okay, not really a whole lot else to show there. We do have the same PowerShell support. So if we were to look under add MDT, we can run a PowerShell script. So the same changes that we get from Light Touch, we get into ZTI as well. Next up, user-driven installation. This was the scenario added in MDT 2010 Update 1, which is basically a standard ZTI task sequence with a wizard added into it. So giving you the wizard-driven Light Touch type experience, but running inside of a Config Manager task sequence. With MDT 2012, the UDI designer, which is used to configure that wizard, and the wizard itself were completely rewritten to give you some additional capabilities. It added the ability to handle the new app model from Config Manager 2012, to be able to enable BitLocker, configure user device affinity. There's a new replace scenario wizard so that you can capture user state from one machine to a USB key or a USB drive and then restore it back to a new computer. There's new abilities to localize it. There's an SDK provided for it, so that if you have a developer that wants to create a new pane to add to that, that is possible if they know some C# and C++. Again, because it's based on the ZTI task sequence, we also get the same ZTI improvements with partitioning and progress displays and PowerShell support and the Windows 8 and ADK preparations that are going on as well. So what we should look at on UDI is what this new designer looks like and what the new wizard looks like. So since I'm already here, we'll start with the designer. If I go to MDT, UDI Wizard Designer. We can tell it that we want to open the config file. And now we get kind of a visual view of the flow of the wizard that we're currently working on, showing us thumbnails of each of the wizard panes, what they would look like when they're fully populated with data. And if we wanted to configure any of them, we can just double-click on it and change the settings for that pane. So in this case, we could change the text on the welcome page, or in the case of the applications page, we can configure the apps that are displayed. In the case of user device affinity, one of the new ones, you can specify that the user can specify this, that there are validations that get put on it, what it should be populated with by default, which is the join account. So all of the pages within the wizard can be customized, they can be added, they can be removed, they can be rearranged. So you would use this wizard to do, or this utility to do the initial configuration, save that XML file into the MDT toolkit files package, have Config Manager distribute that to all the DPs, and then on the client side, when it executes this, you would see the wizard that looks pretty much like we were just browsing. So there's a client. Here's the wizard running. There's the initial default text that's present. We can enable BitLocker, which I don't really want to do in a virtual machine. We can specify if we had multiple images. We could choose which image we wanted to deploy, what disk we wanted to deploy to if there were more than one. In this case, we've identified that there's an existing Windows installation on what's labeled the D drive in Windows PE. Remember that we create the boot partition first and the OS partition second? That's what causes it to become the D drive in Windows PE. In the full OS, that boot drive ends up getting hidden. So the C drive is the OS, and you don't see the boot volume. But when you boot into PE, both of them are visible and end up getting drive letters assigned. So the boot becomes C, and the OS becomes D at that point. Gets a little interesting. If we want to migrate data from that existing OS using USMT offline state capture, we just have to tell it where to put it. In this case, the only thing that makes sense is to use hard links and keep the data local. If we didn't want to do that, we would just check the box here to say format and partition that disk, which will destroy any data that was on it. And at that point, it would say, oh, okay, now maybe you want to do a replacement. If you're doing a replacement, you could restore the state from a USB drive, which I don't have any attached to this VM, or we could restore from a network location that we had pre-configured using the designer earlier. In this case, I didn't put any network locations in there, so I don't have anything to choose from. So I'll say no data to restore. We can run through various validations to make sure that we're ready to move forward. We can specify computer name, choose from a drop-down list of domains and OUs. In this case, I had to specify the join account that I want to use, or we could pre-populate that through the designer as well. It'll validate that, which is why it's taking a few seconds here. Then we need to specify the administrator password, make a few other choices, and then it'll kick off the deployment. So it really becomes a lot like the light touch deployment process, just running through the wizard, answering a bunch of questions, having those questions configure the necessary task sequence variables with the values that the task sequence needs to do this work, and then the wizard's done its thing. In the case of user device affinity with CM12, we can specify who should become the primary user of this machine, time zones, locales, choose the apps that we want to install, final summary of all the choices that we made, and then when we click finish, the task sequence continues on. In this case, running the formatting for Windows 6.1, which is Windows 7. Okay. So that's kind of the very quick overview of what's in LTI, what's in ZTI, what's in UDI. Now, let's talk a little bit about MDT 2012 Update 1, which I've mentioned a few times as we're going through, so I'm not announcing much at this point because I've already said it probably 10 times. But this new release is designed to do a few things. Most importantly, it's to add support for Windows 8. So adding support for Dart 8, the beta version of that's out now. Adding additional logic to handle installing roles and features. Adding additional support for UEFI. There's a new version of UEFI, version 2.3.1, that adds some specific Windows 8 support for things like secure boot and x86 OSs and those types of things. Making the PowerShell support work with PowerShell 3.0 and .NET 4, ensuring that it also runs inside of Windows PE, and being able to fix up some of those VHD deployment limitations that I had mentioned before. So all of that really is the core for this release, that we wanted to get a much better experience for Windows 8. So it should come as no surprise to anyone that MDT 2012 Update 1 will ship at the same time as Windows 8. As soon as someone can tell me when that's going to be, we'd really like to know. When is this project supposed to be done? No one will tell us, but we have some guesses, and we know that at beta, which we've said will be in a few weeks, will be feature complete, and at that point, we'll just be fixing bugs and getting ready for the final Windows 8 RTM. Okay, we've also added at the same time a few new features. So we've added support for System Center Orchestrator. How many of you are familiar with Orchestrator? It's a cool product. If you have a System Center license, you already have an Orchestrator license because it's provided as part of the System Center suite. It's basically kind of like a, a batch scheduler on steroids. So you can go into a UI and via drag and drop build a series of steps that should be executed to do a whole bunch of things. Talk to Active Directory, talk to Config Manager, talk to Service Manager. It has all of these connectors that know how to make it easy for you to integrate with these different systems without having to write code. So in MDT 2010 and 2012, if you wanted to do dynamic deployments, we would always talk about how you could write stored procedures and how you could write web services and how this would be really nice to do these end-to-end deployments. But most of you are IT pros, not developers. Developers write stored procedures and web services. IT pros use Orchestrator. Orchestrator is really designed to make it easy for IT pros to do those same types of integrations. In some cases, maybe Orchestrator doesn't natively provide an integration pack to support a particular product, but it will run PowerShell, it'll run VBScript, it'll run whatever you want behind the scenes. And like web services, these Orchestrator runbooks don't execute on the clients, they execute on a server. So in the case of adding support for Orchestrator, that means that we'll be able to add a step into the task sequence that just tells Orchestrator, please run this runbook. Please run this job, if you want to think of it in the batch terms. It'll then take whatever task sequence variables are needed, pass those along to the runbook as inputs. The runbook does its thing running back on the server. We can say we want to wait for it to finish. When it finishes, it sends results back to the task sequence. All of those results get put into task sequence variables, so subsequent steps in the task sequence can then act on the results of the runbook. So some of the scenarios that you might think of would be maybe move the computer to a different OU, clean up old computer objects out of Active Directory. Oops, my deployment failed. Please file a service ticket. Send me an email when this deployment is done. All of those things become like one or two step Orchestrator runbooks. Very easy to create, very quick to create, very easy to hook into the process. So we wanted to add that in. We also added support for System Center Configuration Manager monitoring. There were a few missing pieces in the monitoring, which was designed for light touch, that prevented it from being effectively used with zero touch. We've fixed those by adding a couple of steps into the task sequence, adding better support for Dart into the MDT scripts, and not necessarily making it so that it's infinitely scalable and can support Config Manager hierarchy as large as you can throw at it. No, it's really more about providing something that's nice and simple, just like the light touch side, using a SQL compact database that can get up to 2 gigs, so maybe a few thousand machines at one time, that does automatic cleanup, that doesn't really do any archiving. It's really just designed to be simple to show you at this point in time, here's what's running in your environment. On the UDI side, we've also made some enhancements to the designer so that you can build your own pages without writing code. As I mentioned, in 2012, we added an SDK. If you had a C# and a C++ developer, they could create a new pane to add into the UDI wizard. With update 1, you'll be able to do that using the designer itself, just using drag and drop. So drag a field onto the new wizard pane, specify what task sequence variable you want to tie it to, and off you go. So not a huge scope. That's pretty much what we're looking at this point, in addition to fixing bugs and making sure that all the different scenarios play out, making sure that offline USMT is supported for light touch, zero touch, and UDI. So just some other work going on behind the scenes, but this is really the core of the functionality that we're looking at for this new release. So let me switch over to my server again. So this is the same UDI designer that we were looking at before. I'm actually looking at the new version. I can say that I want to add a page. So I'll say I want a build your own page. I'll call this one demo. It's then in the list here. So I can double click it to open it. We can see the design surface for that. Let's just do something simple like add a label to it. And maybe a combo box. So maybe for the label, I want it to say site name. My artistic skills are lacking today. Line those up as close as I can. I can add values to the list. Maybe the value red should display Redmond. Orlando. Etc. And just to prove that this actually works, let's go back to the flow. Add that page right after the welcome page, and then preview it to see what exactly did that do. While it thinks about that for a little bit, so we can see the welcome page, we can see the demo page in the list. When I click next, there's my page that I created with the drop-down list for me to make the choices. So it's really designed to give you simple capabilities. It's not going to be creating any super complex page, but for the most part, you're not looking to create complex pages. You're just looking to ask for additional information. So hopefully this will enable that reasonably well with the UDI scenario. So that's one item. The other change then is supporting the Config Manager SP1 logic, basically the additional UEFI formatting steps, which aren't terribly interesting. There's also the support for offline BitLocker enablement, which I think was referred to in one of the earlier sessions today, where you can actually tell BitLocker to enable encryption inside a Windows PE and tell it to only encrypt use space. So let's say you have a normal task sequence. You would format and partition the disk. You would then tell BitLocker to encrypt the used space. How much used space is there right after you formatted the disk? None. So the encryption takes a couple of seconds to complete, and then you install the operating system. So the operating system gets installed to an empty but already encrypted disk, encrypted on the fly. So as a result, you don't have that two-hour or three-hour encryption time at the end of the task sequence. All of it's done up front, and it only adds maybe 2 or 3% to the overall duration of the task sequence. So we've added that into the task sequences. That's already in LightTouch for MDT 2012. It gets added into Config Manager as part of their SP1 support and is in our task sequence templates in Update 1. On the role and feature side, kind of switching away from being Config Manager specific, one of the limitations in MDT 2012 was that we didn't have any support for installing Windows 8 roles and features, because we knew that there was a lot of work that we needed to do, and we didn't have time to get it done the way we wanted, so we postponed it for this release and fix some other problems at the same time. So like for Windows 7, when I want to install roles and features, I can choose, give me the list of roles and features for Windows 7, and then I can choose which ones I want to install. So maybe I want to install games, maybe I want to install IIS, whatever features I wanted to install on the OS, I can choose here, and the task sequence will take care of doing that. Same with Windows 8 release preview, you get a different list. Same with Windows Server 2012, get a different list. Same with Core, you get a different list. So that's the first part. That's the first challenge. The other one was, well, we needed to support uninstall. So let me look at uninstall. So I have a task sequence here where I put in a step that says uninstall roles and features, and then pretty much I selected everything except for IE, because I wanted to leave that around. And what else did I leave here? Something else that I didn't uninstall. Oh, Media Player. I left Media Player.